Well, Chris.
Look at us.
Well. You could be very annoyed with the media, I think. Although, they're going to treat him with kid gloves. But welcome to knee-jerk reaction with a young quarterback. Oh, I am seeing everything happening on Dolphins Twitter right now. And a lot of the same avatars that were in my mentions about my quarterback and have been for going on 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden have this level-headed approach. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's almost as if you should apply context to certain situations and take a minute, take a beat, and not overreact. It's incredible that we can all finally agree on this, Chris. How are you feeling?
You know, it's a tough one. I mean, I think it's a little, it's not exactly apples to apples. Your team, a little more talented, I'd say. I digress.
Certainly year two. Look, every situation is different. I'm not drawing comparisons. I find it funny. Because I told you, I'm not crazy about the Dolphin fan, even though I apply the very same sensibilities to several of my teams. But I get it. It's one part of Miami sports fandom that I'm not really aligned with. So I get to be like, okay, yeah, I see why everyone else thinks we're so annoying. But yeah, so he gets Tua, for those that don't know, the uninitiated, Tua gets pulled. He was not good. I think he had 80 yards passing. He was sacked 6 times. This is several days after he said, I thought the NFL would be harder. Now, in fairness to him, there was context applied to that, and he even walked it back a little bit because it got aggregated and the headlines got blown out of control. But benched for ineffectiveness, the coach Brian Flores admits that in postgame, and Ryan Fitzpatrick almost brings you back until he throws a pick in the end zone. Simmons, an incredible play made by that safety. Not enough is made of that, but now that you've had some time, you've had to sleep in, where's your head at?
I mean, when he first made the move, I was like, there is no way that this is based on his performance. He must be nicked up, because the first like hour, but like while the game was still going on, everyone was speculating. Is it like, is it an injury? Is it just performance? And so when I was like, so sure. I was telling everybody in my family, I'm just like, this is 1,000% he's nicked up. And then after the game, it comes out that it was just performance. And I was just like, a little blown away, a little impressed with Brian Flores. I don't know, man. I just trust Brian Flores at this point. I'm not overreacting. And then Mina brought up a good point that I actually agree with Mina, that this could have just been protecting Tua, because that offensive line looked bad. So I don't know, man.
I was going back and forth, and I tuned in, and I saw that Fitzpatrick was in, and I saw Tua on the sideline. I texted Chris, and I said, what happened with Tua? Why is he out? And he goes, ankle injury. He's out. It's an ankle, I think.
I was like, it has to be. Chris, like, what scenario do you bench a quarterback?
Well, the broadcasters were like, we're not sure if this is an injury or if this is, you know, based on performance. So I texted Chris. I'm like, what happened? And he's like, injury. I think it's his ankle. I'm pretty sure it's his ankle. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, there was that replay where it kind of looked like someone landed on his ankle. But then you realize pretty quickly that no one's working on him if he were hurt. So either the training staff is totally dropping the ball or he's not at all hurt. And again, you said not apples to apples, but drawing comparison. Remember, Baker Mayfield was pulled from a game because the offensive line was getting crushed when he had cracked ribs. And you sort of pull him to protect him, but also in effectiveness. Now, Brian Flores in the postgame press conference didn't say at all it was to protect him. Granted, he's got a locker room to worry about, and that throws offensive linemen under the bus. I think it's a little bit of both, but fact of the matter is Tua was not very good, Billy.
I've given up on looking at the sidelines to figure out if people are working on players because they're injured or not. Because last week, Drew Brees was just chilling on the sideline, and then we find out, oh, he has 12 fractured ribs this week. Like, oh, okay, so he's just fine. He's just going to stay in there. It's all good. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm just kind of feeling around. 12 seems like a lot of fractured ribs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many exactly I have. But if 12 of them were fractured, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be standing.
Yeah, I saw I've seen 11, I've seen 12. I've definitely seen the collapsed lung, and I was a little surprised to find out that I had that many ribs. Also,
yes,
granted, it's a very big man that was landing on Drew Brees, but he did turn away. We were talking last week about how that's actually the film that you put out to say this is how you avoid that penalty. It didn't really look a lot for the NFL. Like, Dalvin Cook got absolutely punished on one hit in that Cowboys-Vikings games, and I thought, okay, well, he's got to have 12 cracked ribs, too. It seemed fairly innocuous, and now Drew Brees is, like, he basically had a car accident.
I love meat. I'm just going to start with that. I'm not anti people eating meat. It's kind of crazy that we just eat ribs of animals, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah, let's get this like meat in between the ribs. And that's delicious if we cook it the right way.
Let's tear these bones apart and really get in between. Really get that meat.
So you trust Brian Flores, Chris?
I don't know.
That is a ballsy decision.
He's got that Belichick thing so far where he does things that nobody expects him to do. And it's one of those things that I'm not just going to rip him just because I didn't expect it. This guy, like very stereotypical analysis, this guy has his finger on the pulse of this team more than we do. And I just kind of trust him at this point, like the Tua thing. And I kind of see it from the aspect of the plan was to put Tua in when they did. But that doesn't mean, Tua, that you just like I get him sending a message to Tua of, hey, yeah, the plan was to put you in week whatever. But guess what? If you play like shit, we still have Fitzpatrick here. And I like the idea of reminding him of that.
These are big, meaningful games. They drop Tua into a playoff chase. Now, if there was one thing to nitpick outside of that Arizona game, in which I came away very impressed with Tua, hasn't been spectacular, hasn't needed to be. Certainly hasn't been the reason that they've won those games, although you can make a very solid argument for what he did against Kyler Murray in Arizona. Not sustainable to continue scoring week after week in all three phases of the game. You needed Tua to do a hell of a lot more than he did. Granted, the offensive line was not good. Personnel-wise, it's the same offensive line that they trotted out there. Denver is without Von Miller. I know Chubb's a good pass rusher, but maybe they were due to revert back to mean, Chris?
And even yesterday, they were put in a good situation to start the game. The defense got an interception, put them in scoring position. We got that early touchdown. Like, it's insane the how lucky and fortunate he's been early on in these games. But yeah, this Tua has not been impressive in two of the four games. And, you know, he's a young quarterback. I'm still high on him. But yeah, I mean, he's not looked great in two of the games.
Chris, at what point are you going to say, okay, his inability to push the ball down the field is a problem? Right? Because he was 11 of something for 80 yards. And you're like, okay, every pass is a quick fire, three-step drop, you know, two-yard slant. Like, there's nothing that he's doing to push the ball to the second level of the defense.
I mean, that is his strength. So I think they're just trying to protect him. You know, he's young. And I do expect them to hopefully, like, to your point, it's all tight spaces right now, all close, short passes. So I do obviously hope that they open it up. But I just think they're protecting him right now.
Well, it's hard to open it up when you have someone basically within a foot of you in a second and a half. There was a lot of pressure in that game. And this is normal for a rookie.
Right.
Now, getting pulled isn't exactly normal. That's a very dramatic step. There's a lot of coaches that wouldn't go that far because that's the situation now that he has to handle in the locker room. Though, I think we can all agree that the way that Tua is built, competitive wise, like, this is not an ego management type of thing. I don't think he lacks for confidence. I think he'll get right back to work. And Brian Flores has already said he's a starter. This was just a decision for that game and that game alone in that moment.
I wonder if there was any part of Flores that saw in Tua, this guy's feeling himself a little bit. Like, I don't like, and Tua doesn't seem like the guy that gives off those vibes at all. But what other explanation do you have for Flores kind of sending a message to Tua?
You think Flores took him out of the game not because he thought that Ryan Fitzpatrick could lead a 2-minute drill and win the game? It's because he thought Tua was feeling himself too much.
No, I don't mean specifically in that game he was feeling himself. I'm just saying overall, Tua was named starter a few weeks ago. I haven't been in those meetings. I haven't seen the way Tua has really reacted to that. Maybe there had to be something in Brian Flores that was like, maybe let's take this guy down a peg or two. I don't know. Like, what other explanation?
wouldn't you want your, you know, rookie quarterback to feel himself? Like, isn't that the whole point? Like, to get the confidence to a level where, look at Justin Herbert. Like, I understand that he didn't look good against the Dolphins, but if you're going to tell me that rookie quarterback shouldn't be doing that, he's throwing for 307 yards and three touchdowns every single week.
I know what you're talking about, Chris. This is what's going on here. Brian Flores, we all know, New England Patriot, right? So what he's done, he's seen what's been going on with Brady and Belichick for two decades, right? And he saw how things kind of fell apart there at the end, and it became a question of who is the one that gets the credit for all of this success going on. And he wants to make sure very early on, listen, Tua, this isn't going to happen between us. I'm putting my foot down right now. You will not be stealing Brian Flores' shine.
I mean, to borrow from Chris, I don't think it's exactly apples to apples, Brady Belichick to Brian
Well,
Flores.
Not yet, but this is the thing. What happened? Bill Belichick, we thought he's this disciplinarian. He has everybody under control there, and I don't want to bring up Aaron Hernandez, but things go on in New England sometimes where players get out of control. Whoa. And now look, Tom Brady's in Tampa, and New England's falling apart. So Brian Flores is like, I'm going to start right now.
Is this a bad loss, Chris?
Yes. I mean, see, that's the thing. We've come so far in these 4 or 5 weeks. Before the season, you would have thought this is a coin flip game. Dolphins not that great. Denver not that great. In the 4 weeks that have just passed, yes, I expected to win this game. And I feel like the Dolphins fan can feel happy about the fact that people expected them to win that game. So we've come somewhere if that's a bad loss.
Do you want to know how far the Dolphins have come, Chris? To the point where last night on Sunday Night Football, they were talking about the Chiefs' upcoming schedule, and they mentioned the Dolphins as a tough game and saying the Chiefs have a pretty tough schedule coming up.
Dude, I saw Twitter accounts, like national Twitter accounts, tweeting about the Dolphins. We're relevant, and I'm excited just for that fact.
They bought so much capital with me over the last 3 weeks because I was betting it against them. I'm like, this is not sustainable. Scoring in all three phases of the game, it is not. And I finally bought in and I bet on the Dolphins. It was a Mina Kimes bet, and they fell to earth. That's a normal NFL loss. In the grand scheme of things, your worst loss of the season was probably at New England before, and that was week one. If you do transitive property, Denver won at New England. So head-to-head, Denver, a little bit of a tougher matchup, I guess. The graphic is still in the hunt. I'm trying to dilute how bad this loss was. You had expectations, which makes it more of a crushing blow. But Denver will do that to you late in the season, even when they have teams that are subpar.
Tua did not have a great game, but there were things that you saw that you realized he's going to learn not to do stuff like that. Like, he had one play in particular where he decided to try to run away and took a sack technically because he ran out of bounds like 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, where, you know, all right, he's going to learn, just throw the ball away. That's not a sack. We won't lose 3 yards. So while he hasn't looked great, there are things that he's doing that you can tell are just rookie mistakes that he'll figure out.
It was a difficult weekend for the Miami Dolphins in that a lot of teams that they were competing with got victories in that playoff chase. The Colts came from behind and won that game in overtime. The Titans, even though now all of a sudden you turn your attention to the Ravens, who are a game below the Browns in the standings, and the Browns, who have taken advantage of a much lighter schedule, finally beat up on the NFC East, have Jacksonville next. They're sitting at 7-3. So it was a bad weekend to drop that result for Miami because they essentially lose a game on the entire AFC field.
Something Billy said made me think.
Is it the ribs thing?
Yeah, Tua running out of bounds at 3 yards and taking a sack. Who's the king of running out of bounds after like a 1 yard gain? And I'm going to give you two answers here. Derek Carr or Kirk Cousins?
I think it's Derek Carr. Which, by
he
the
did
way,
it like three times last
time. Yeah, I think the nation pretty much comes away even as impressed with them, Las Vegas in that Sunday night game as they were with their victory at Arrowhead, because you thought, okay, you caught them on a bad day, bit of a fluky scenario. But wire to wire, they hang with them. That was an amazing drive by Patrick Mahomes. I can't believe that's his first comeback of that sort, throwing a go-ahead touchdown in the final minute, but they're always ahead so much. It's certainly not for a lack of skill on his part, because he made that look so easy. But I think a lot of people have a bit more respect now for the Raiders, even in defeat.
I like Derek Carr. Tony, did you see Derek Carr's move yesterday when he would run and go out of bounds? And he does the thing where he sticks the ball out like
always.
2 feet in
he
front
always
of him.
Does that.
I love that move. I always feel like officials don't appreciate that move and don't give the credit that that deserves. A lot of times the ball is extended, like, and they seem to mark it always a little further back. They don't like to respect the reaching out as much as they should.
This spotting of the ball is so ridiculous to me. I don't like that if you dive feet first, it's where you've given yourself up and it doesn't matter how far you slide, because it could be like a wet thing. You could go like 10 yards before someone touches you. It's like, nah, 10 yards back. If you dive forward, there's just too many rules in terms of where we're going to put the ball. I don't think anyone knows what they are, including the officials. That's why when he runs out of bounds with his ball out here, like 3 feet in front of him with his arm, you're like, nah, he stepped out over there.
And if you guys were wondering another reason why the Dolphins lost yesterday, I also bet the Dolphins. And I'm telling you, over the last 5 years, I can count on one hand the amount of times I've bet the Dolphins. I bet a lot. I'm a degenerate, but I never bet the Dolphins. And I did yesterday because I was just like, they're on a roll, only 4.5. Like, this is an easy win for the Dolphins.
You had expectations, huh? Expectations.
Worse.
Wow. And then you realized two was a bust.
Whoa.
What?
Who said getting that? We're getting to that territory.
I mean, dude, how about Herbert? That? What? I mean, Herbert is clearly the class of this quarterback class, is he not?
You back off a little bit. You back off.
I mean, Burrow, it was a terrible day, right? It really was. Tua gets pulled, Herbert's Herbert, and Burrow gets hurt. I mean, Herbert was the guy in this class. It's unbelievable. He's a game manager.
We're already at the stage where Herbert is Herbert because we've established and all acknowledge who Herbert is.
Which he's going to win Rookie of the Year now.
It's like Mahomes.
Yeah, with a Burrow injury, Herbert essentially clinched Rookie of the Year. One thing that's a little jarring because, once again, on a later start, I try to give Sugats a little bit of leeway, a little bit of rest, and he still can't nail the commute time with a later start. I can notice that you're clean shaven. What happened to the playoff beard?
Well, the playoffs are over.
Okay, so your season is over. Lacrosse season is over.
Yeah, the season's over.
All right, so there are no more lacrosse trips.
There are no more trips till the spring. Mm-hmm. Spring, summer.
Okay, no more trips.
No more lacrosse trips.
You promise.
There are trips, perhaps, but not lacrosse trips.
I
promise you. Yeah. No. Lacrosse is over, Mike.
Till the spring.
Till the spring summer season, we are done.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm right.
And the spring summer season is even up for debate, to be honest with you, because most of the girls have committed. So.
Speaking of late starts, by the way, the Dolphins have had way too many 4-0-5 starts this season.
Oh my God! So
I don't know what's going on. It feels like every week now is 4-0-5. I need the 1 o'clock Dolphin start so I can kind of get back into normalcy and do my things after 4 o'clock.
What? That is not a good take, because if you want to actually watch your team and the red zone, they show up more on the red zone because there are fewer games in that 4 o'clock window.
No, I'm with Billy on this. I like to have a nice, relaxing 4 o'clock window. Give me a nice little two games. Give me a little Oakland at
two
Denver.
Games.
Yeah, oh, I like it to slow down a little
bit.
Out
of here.
What are you give me the 1 o'clock
about?
Games. Give me the Dolphins and like nine other games in the 1 o'clock.
No.
I want my head to be spinning the whole time. And then you get to the 4 o'clock, so you take a little nappy poo.
Yep.
You watch the two games. You wake up in the third quarter. That's how you do football, folks.
Tell them, sister.
Nappy poo at 4 o'clock? What do you mean?
Like, No, I'm not Tony. I meant once all the 1 o'clock games are in, late in the 4 o'clock hour, then you get on the couch, a little nappy.
Well, you got
also 4 o'clock games. That's all start at the same time. Enough of these staggered starts, 4:05, 4:25. None of that anymore, right?
That's annoying, 4:05, 4:25. But you got Dolphins Jets this weekend, so that's a 1 o'clock start. But I think the 4 o'clock start is a sign of respect. It's a sign of, like, people care about your team.
Or
like,
it's a sign of you traveling to the West Coast.
Well, no, but I think you're more of a feature team. Were both games, because they've been in that 4:05, 4:25 slot the last two or three weeks, I believe. Were those games on the West Coast, all of those games? There was a home game in there.
Who were they playing in that home game? They were playing a Chargers team, which is a West Coast team. So they like to stagger those starts sometimes for the West Coast audiences,
correct,
even though they played Seattle at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Yes, sometimes especially when you have two East Coast teams, that is a sign of respect because that is a big TV window for the networks. But more often than not, certainly in the situation the Dolphins were in this week, it's to cater to a West Coast audience.
I feel like gamblers like the 4:25 start, because I don't know about you guys. I always like slack about getting my 4 o'clock bets in, and then it's like, shoot, it's 4:10, but I still have time to get that 4:25 game in. So I feel like that 4:25 late start is just for gamblers.
If I lived on the West Coast, I wouldn't want them to have 4 o'clock starts on the East Coast because that's 1 o'clock. You know what's better than a 1 o'clock start? A 10 a.m. start. That's why I love the London games because I wake up, I'm eating breakfast, watching football. The day's already started. I know I'm going to have a good one. If I lived in California, I'd want all my games to be at 1 o'clock Eastern.
Right.
Yeah. We had a little insight into California life with the NBA playoffs when we had those 4 o'clock playoff games and the 7 o'clock start here local time. And then all of a sudden, we're getting full night's sleep during the NBA playoffs, something that we've never really had. West Coast has it figured out.
I'm over the West Coast enough already. All these late NBA games starting at 10 o'clock at night to cater to the West Coast. I mean, who cares about the West Coast for real?
Yeah, but it's 7 o'clock there. I've told you my friend will not move back to the East Coast because he loves his football starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. Like, loves it. And it's over by 4, you know?
It is a pretty sweet deal that they got out there.
Yeah.
Because look, even the there's games that walk it right up to NBC's Football Night in America, right? But on the West Coast, they're like, "Let's go. I have an early dinner reservation I'd like to make." Ooh, I want to. It's like some people are still being able to go out to brunch after their team plays in that 10 a.m. window. It's ridiculous.
You guys will be excited to know you got 1 o'clock the rest of the way. They might flex a couple of your games, but you are 1 o'clock the rest of the way. But potentially Dolphins Bills could be flexed, and potentially Dolphins Chiefs could be flexed. Potentially.
Oh, I love that. Being a fan and looking at your schedule. Hey, we got a shot at a flex. You got
two shots at a flex here, Chris.
You have the Sunday Night Football schedule, and the other, you have your team schedule.
I cannot remember the last time the Dolphins were in that conversation. To be flexed into a good game. Woo!
When's the last time you were flat out flexed into a primetime slot?
I think we were flexed out of some games like more recently than in, obviously. I don't know. I honestly can't remember last time we were flexed.
I mean, the Dolphins Bills will be flexed in all likelihood, right?
Well, no, it depends on what they have.
Yeah,
you have to do that. Remember, they didn't flex out the Patriots because Lamar Jackson versus Bill Belichick is marquee. And even as bad as that NFC East thing is, they're not moving an NFC battle out, especially even though those teams are bad, they have playoff implications. So NBC is not doing that. So they have the Bears Packers this Sunday night. They've already advertised that's next Sunday night's game.
Bears Packers.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one following has a chance, but I don't think they're going to flex out Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has big numbers on TVs, and Denver is still in the graphic now for the playoff chase. So Denver Chiefs, that stays. Steelers, Bills, they're not flexing. That is a massive matchup. San Francisco, Dallas Cowboys, that probably doesn't get flexed because there's an opportunity for Dallas to make the playoffs, and San Francisco is obviously in the playoff chase. Tennessee, Green Bay, I don't see that game being flexed.
Yeah.
We're going to have a flex-free football season.
All right, so you guys are 1 o'clock the rest of the way with the exception of that Raiders game, which is at Oakland, which is at Vegas, excuse me, which might be a 4 o'clock start. That's it. I mean...
Tough schedule, Dolphins, it seems like. Raiders, Chiefs.
Yeah, I believe this is going to make history. The only game that was flexed.
You also have the Bengals and Jets.
Due to COVID concerns, they put the Seattle-Arizona game in there because Tampa, Las Vegas had COVID situations going on. This is going to be a flex-free football season for NBC. That's a bit of a bummer. And kudos to them for picking a pretty banging schedule.
Yeah. Did you guys discuss already the feelings you had, Chris, when he took two out, Flores?
Yeah, we kind of
dangerous game. Okay, good.
Yeah, that was the main talking point.
Dangerous game. That's all I'm going to say.
What did you think? What were you thinking?
Dangerous game.
Okay, so what did you think outside of repeating dangerous game?
He's playing a dangerous game.
In what direction? For who?
Who's playing that?
Dangerous game with Tua's emotions. Okay. I mean, that's it. Dangerous game. You know, the first time the kid faces adversity, you take him out. I mean, it's a terrible job by Flores.
Does he trust him? Does he not? Who knows? Dangerous game.
I got to tell you, I wrote down in my notes, Brian Flores doesn't trust Tua. That's what I wrote down. I mean,
did you write down dangerous game?
I did not write down dangerous game. I wish I had.
All right. Can I see your notes for the game? Brian Flores. You typed out, Brian Flores does not trust Tua, and that was it?
Yeah. Spoiler alert. They're in my weekend observations. That one is. Here, let me see some game notes.
Well, Stugatz, while you look that up to catch you up, one of the other things that was thought was Chris thought that possibly what was going on here was that Brian Flores thought Tua was feeling himself too much lately, so he took him out to humble him a little bit.
Really?
A little humble pie. A little humble pie.
A little humble pie, huh?
And I said, what I think is going on here is that Brian Flores thinks that this could be a Belichick-Brady situation 20 years down the road, so he's letting him know who's who right now.
Oh, got it. Right, who's who. Yep, I'm the boss. I wrote down, Mike, I think it's fascinating. You think Fitz gives you a better chance to win the game? I wrote that down. You run the risk of upsetting Tua and embarrassing him. Isn't he the guy you drafted to get you out of that situation in the first place, down 10 late in a big game, right on the road? You drafted him to get you out of that situation. And the second he's in that situation, the first time he's ever in that situation, you go back to Fitz magic. I mean, that's a terrible job. And Fitzpatrick didn't get down. What if Fitzpatrick had won the game? Then what do you do?
Then you have two boss-ass quarterbacks.
No, that's why it's a dangerous game.
Yeah. Boss-ass quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know what the old saying is?
Dangerous game.
Chris, you know what the old saying is? You have two boss-ass quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Stu Gotts, let me paint a scenario for you where he doesn't look like a jerk. Stu, let me paint a scenario for you. After the game, Tua comes in Brian Flores' office. They're socially distanced, of course.
Right.
And he says, yo, man, you got sacked like 17 times. I just did not trust our offensive line. We're good, man. You're going to start against the Jets. I just didn't want you to get hurt.
You know what, Chris? That's funny that that you mentioned that, because one of the other things that I wrote down is, I don't know, like, there is, you have to manage expectations. As a coach of the number one lacrosse team in the country, I will tell you it's a very big part of the job. I don't know the conversations that were had on the front end, and perhaps you're right, where Flores is a master salesman and said, hey, I'm not doing this for me and the team, and Ron, I'm doing this for you, Tua. You are my guy. You'll be starting next week. Our offensive line is playing terrible. I'm going to try to find some Fitz magic here, but don't worry, win or lose, you're my guy next week against the Jets. I don't know if he said that or not, but that's what you need to say. You know?
Wow, how about this? Before I derail, because I have a follow-up question on that, Stu Gotts, but maybe what was going on there is he was thinking back. He remembered Fitzpatrick had kind of like that sour attitude after he was replaced. Maybe Fitzpatrick has been kind of like a rain cloud in some of these meetings. And he's like, you know what? We need to have everybody on the same page. Let me throw Ryan out there, get his spirits up a little bit so we can move forward, have a positive QB room, because we need Fitzmagic to be teaching Tua what he needs to know. Let me toss Ryan out there, see if he's got one more in him. And if not, you know what? We put him out there, his spirits will be higher a little bit, and then I'll be happy moving forward. Maybe that's what was going on.
Perhaps. Yeah, I think he's torn. Like, he's trying to play for the now. I didn't even disagree with him trying to find a spark with Fitzmagic. I'm just telling you, he's playing a dangerous game, because he's playing. Mm-hmm. There's two games that he's playing. No, Chris, but here are the two games that he's playing. This is why it's dangerous.
Two dangerous games.
You're playing for the now, but you also have to consider the future.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two very dangerous games.
Two games you're playing at once.
Is he the guy to be playing these games?
Right. It takes a very crafty guy to be able to intertwine those two games and pull it off successfully.
I think intertwine is not a word.
When did you become the number one lacrosse coach in America, just out of curiosity?
Well, my team, listen, I don't take much of the credit, okay? I mean, my team is number one in the country for their division.
The rankings came out.
Well, I mean, it's impossible for us not to be. I mean, we
you weren't last week.
Well, no, that's settled.
Well, no. We were last week. I don't know if they do the weekly rankings. I have no idea.
Where can I find the rankings?
No, it's not enough for
today. Go to lacrossemagazine.com. I think we were preseason number 2 or 3.
Boom. Okay, that was preseason. And wait a second. They only come out with preseason rankings, and you're just doing, well, this team lost, this team lost. So we got to be number one.
Well, of the top 10 teams in the preseason top 10, we were the only 22 team that went through the last 3 weekends without a loss.
So you've crowned yourself number one.
Well, every other team lost. I mean,
I get your reasoning, but you've crowned yourself number one.
I would be shocked if the weekly. Now, I don't know if he does it weekly or waits for the season to end, but I'd be shocked if we were not the number one team. I would make a stink about it, to be honest with you. I would.
They're the only 22 team that's done it, Mike.
Yes.
Exactly. I need to find the active
rankings. Mike, aren't you proud? It's a Florida team. We're not. I mean,
now you're.
It really is
civic
something
pride.
We should be talking more about.
This is a local team. I mean, we're not known for lacrosse down here, especially women's lacrosse. And this team is number. They've worked very, very hard.
That's it. That's an excellent point.
And they're number one in the country.
Why aren't more people writing about this? What's Greg Cody doing? What's Barry Jackson doing? Why is no one talking about this right now?
Greg Cody needs to write an article because as a proud Floridian, I am honored to know that my state houses one of the best women's lacrosse teams in the East Division.
Whether
up for debate.
Whether it's the best or not, you have 20 South Floridian girls who are the age of 16 who have worked really, really hard to compete with girls up in Maryland and Long Island, and they have turned themselves into one of the two or three best teams in the country. It's a nice little feel-good local story. I mean, Greg Cody should get on that. What do you think, Chris?
I mean, he'll probably do it if he thinks it'll get him Levitard-type clicks. Associated with this show.
It won't.
What is the team name?
Florida Select 2022.
Well, that's not a great name.
Well, it's the name.
I mean, Select. Let's go Select.
It's not my company. I mean, the name of the program is Florida Select.
That's just
Select.
Oh, yeah, it should be like the Fireballs or something.
Weirdest mascot ever.
I'm looking at Lacrosse Magazine's 2020 watch list for 2022, and there is Rachel Wiener from Florida Select.
There you go.
Wow.
Howdy, boys, Stu.
You guys told something the truth.
What can you tell me about Casey Roberts?
Told something the truth.
Casey Roberts,
captain of my team, midfielder, going to Ohio State University, verbally committed there.
The Ohio State,
where she always wanted to go. Families are big fans of Ohio State. They played the Big Shoe, you're right. She's the heart and soul of the team. She is our captain, has been since day one, and will be our captain for as long as we're doing this, which is about one more season.
Wow, Stu, guys, you should get Richard Lewis to call her to congratulate her. I'm sure she'd love that.
Perhaps I will. You're right.
Any controversy, that's something that you have to navigate in the home as a head coach of the crown number one team in the nation. Someone else is captain, not Rachel?
No, Rachel's one of four captains.
Okay.
Casey was the original captain of the team.
Oh,
Rachel
man.
Had to grow into that position, and she did, and she's done very well.
Sounds
with it.
Like nepotism now.
Well, no. Rachel earned it. I mean, she did. So our four captains are Casey Roberts, Carly Fleischer, Peyton Wayman, and Rachel. Those are the four captains.
If Rachel was having kind of like an off game, right, but she's obviously the future of this team. She's not a senior yet. This is going to be her team next year.
No,
she's
Bill,
one of four captains.
They're all 22, so they're all the same
age.
Right.
Well, But let's say she was having kind of like an off game. Would you bring up kind of like an up-and-comer to maybe teach her a lesson? Or like maybe like a grizzled old vet if she's having an off day, put in the grizzled old vet to maybe lead your team to a victory and hope that Rachel would be fine with that decision after the fact?
It's a great question. After she verbally committed to Northwestern, I sensed that Rachel was feeling a little bit too good about herself. Wasn't playing as hard, trying as hard, leading the way she normally does. And she needed to be humbled. So I did not. She has started every game we ever played. She did not start.
I
sat her for a half.
Dangerous game.
I put dangerous game.
I have terrible news for you, Stu Gatz. The rankings have not been updated since the preseason. So you are still head coach of the number three girls lacrosse team in the land.
Who are the two teams ahead of us?
Monster Lacrosse and Heroes Green.
I will tell you, we beat Heroes Green straight up 9-8.
Boom.
Beat them straight up. We did not play Monsters, only because Monsters, and I hope the girls are okay, Monsters had some COVID. And so the game that we were supposed to play with them this past weekend was canceled because of that.
That's a team name right there, the Monsters.
So wait,
that's a team name.
You left town, but there was no game?
No, we played a different team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In Delaware?
Yeah.
Wow, so that would have been the number one versus number three.
It would have been a big game, yeah.
That would have been flexed.
But Monsters had lost.
Game day would have been there.
Yeah, game day.
But Monsters had lost a couple of games already this season, and we were undefeated.
Really? Rough year.
Listen, it's a tough dance, okay? Once these girls commit, to keep them committed to the team, to the travel team, to keep playing at the level they play, because they were all striving for something. And now most of them have achieved what it is they were striving for.
Yeah.
Right. You got to keep them motivated. The way I do it was with playing time.
What's the difference
between... That's what I control. I control if you play or not. How about that?
Sugats, what's the difference between a tough dance and a dangerous game?
Whew.
Well, dangerous game.
Just eating.
You're literally chewing on it.
Tough Dance is more of Stugatz. I'll take this for
wait,
you.
Wait, no, I'm very curious. I'm very curious to see how Stugatz pulls himself out of this one, Billy. I know, I don't doubt that you have an answer for him, but I'm really curious to see what he formulates here, because I need to get down to what the difference is between a Tough Dance and a Dangerous Game.
So a Tough Dance is more of a psychological, a Tough Game, excuse me, is more of a psychological mind game.
Wait,
that's a
now we got a Tough Game? You've merged Tough Dance and Dangerous Game.
So let's go back to it. Oh, these muffins are so good. A Dangerous Game.
I think I'm going to go back to Billy. I'm sorry. Your gut was right.
Let's see if Billy's reading my mind.
Me and Billy discuss this many times.
Yeah, a dangerous game is usually one person is playing a dangerous game, where a tough dance is back and forth between two or more people. It's a dance. It's more of a collaborative thing.
The tango.
And it's difficult. Exactly. It's a tough dance involving more than one person, where a dangerous game often is just one person playing it.
Could not have said it better myself. Well done.
Unless it's Jumanji. That's a dangerous game involving also, multiple people.
The total subset, yeah. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You couldn't say it better yourself because you were eating for the entire time, too.
Well, those muffins are so
you can't
good.
Get more dangerous of a game than Russian Roulette, right? That's the world's most dangerous game.
Russian Roulette, yeah. What, no doubt.
That and benching, Tua.
I mean, it involves a bullet. I mean...
I read this on Twitter that apparently there was a deleted scene from Die Hard with a Vengeance where McClane plays Russian Roulette but with a rocket launcher.
What?
Wow. Yeah, but it was a deleted scene.
What doesn't make sense is that it was deleted.
That's a dangerous game.
I'm going to find proof of this. I'm like a dog with a bone with this.
What is the most dangerous of games? That's a dangerous game. Oh boy, Mike, while you're looking that up, how'd you feel about what the Heat did over the weekend?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Stugatz, because they made moves and I have no idea if they were good or bad. I have no idea what to think of these moves. Mike, tell me.
Yes, please. Okay. Tell me how to feel.
I'll tell you what they did. What they did was they maintained their flexibility for 2021, which was really what everybody wanted. But then you see other teams, I guess, improve. Really, in the East, the only team that I think you could point to definitively and say they 100% got better is actually Philadelphia. TBD on Milwaukee, because the Bogdanovich thing, like, and if Bogdanovich was enough to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo, then he was never serious about leaving. But he's had the ability to sign that extension and still hasn't. Bogdanovich doesn't end up with Milwaukee because of the tampering stuff. Amin, actually, on The Jump was pretty good about this. This is what happens when you're too eager to feel yourself publicly, because they leak it, and now they made their own bed. Celtics are worse, I think. Now, they've added for Tristan Thompson, right? But head-to-head matchup, I don't really – Tristan Thompson's not the same player he was in 2016. He's going to be a matchup-dependent guy. Some games, you're going to feel his impact. I really think that Miami addressed some glaring needs. It's not sexy, and a lot of people got attached to Jay Crowder in that bubble because he performed lights out up until the NBA Finals, where he started falling back down to earth. Jay Crowder is not who he was in the bubble, and I think a lot of Heat culture zealots, including myself, might get too wrapped up into how good he was there. But if you look at his career, he's actually very comparable to Mo Harkless, and that's $7 million less dollars. Jay Crowder, credit to him, signed a three-year deal with Phoenix. You can't do that at $10 million a year.
Hit some big shots, though, Mike, in the bubble, Jay Crowder.
Let me just make sure I have all the moves that they made. So we lost Derek Jones to Portland. Yeah. Jay Crowder's gone, and we added Avery Bradley and Mo Harkless, right? That's it. Am I missing anything?
Well, Precious is also a part of the offseason. Well, yeah. And I thought point of attack defending was a glaring need. Even with Goran Dragic healthy, it was a bit of a weakness for this team. So to be able to convince Avery Bradley to come here, I'm a big fan of that move, because you need a defender at the point of attack. I think Precious is a great draft pick for what some of Miami's needs were when Bam would go out. Harkless is... that is pretty much a lateral move, maybe a slight step down, but it's, again, less money, and you keep your cap flexibility. And tied into all this, fellas, is you have to take into account another year of growth and development from Bam and Tyler Hero. I don't think you're going to get the same wacky results that you got in the bubble, Anthony, but you have to consider that you did that with a 20-year-old.
No, absolutely. The weird one to me was Myers Leonard 2 for 20. Like, that one to me was an interesting case, and I understand it's a movable contract. A movable contract next year.
Getting emotional. Yeah,
I'm sorry, man. When you have Montrezl Harrell signed 2 for 19 and he's the sixth man of the year, that was really curious to me. I know the Heat have obviously a plan for the next year coming up, and anybody that comes available via trade, Myers Leonard's probably the first one to go, right?
Well, I mean, that I think they showed the value of bench guy. That's why they gave Myers
Leonard. He doesn't do anything.
He's on the bench. He's up. He's clapping every time. He's standing up. Yeah. He is the best bench guy ever.
You take that back right now. I mean,
it is a movable contract, but my understanding is caked into the deal is a no trade clause with him and Goran Dragic because of the nature of those deals. It will be next season. Right now, it's very important to see what happens with Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo, because if Bam waits and Giannis waits, then it's game on. Keep in mind, they share an agent. So you can start running wild with the conspiracy theories. It's going to be hard for Bam Adebayo because you've seen some of these mega extensions from players that are in Bam's draft class. I can't fault Bam for wanting that money right now. So you may ask yourself, what's the big deal if he takes some money right now? You can still clear enough room for 2021. If he waits to extend, you have more flexibility. If he extends right now, Bam, then you're going to have to lose some of these guys because you're going to have to clear them off your books, which, if that's the case, Miami is actually pretty well positioned, because while Myers Leonard, on the surface, $9 million for this upcoming season, that seems like it's a bit much, is an essential property when you're trying to acquire some money. You need to give up money to take on money. So in NBA terms, it's actually kind of necessary to overpay guys like Myers Leonard.
I really like Avery Bradley.
I like Avery Bradley too. His shooting stats. Yes. I think everyone just sort of assumes, well, Harkless and Avery Bradley will be better shooters in Miami. And that's what, I guess, culture buys you. It's a bit of a stretch.
But Mike, you're more focused on the defensive, what they bring defensively, both those guys. Yeah, right. Look. But it stands to reason why people would think that. If you're gonna tout the culture and players get the Heat get the best out of the players that they get, then it stands to reason that Harkless and Avery Bradley would become better shooters.
Look, there was a wide gulf between the Lakers and the Miami Heat when he considered all the injuries and the matchup problems the Lakers presented. And the Lakers have had a tremendous offseason. Bringing in Harrell, even though he wasn't the same player in the bubble, was sort of bizarro Jay Crowder, where all of a sudden he falls apart in the bubble. That's a big deal for them to get. They low-key kind of really needed to get that Gasol trade done because they lost a lot of beef out there, and they could absolutely dominate teams on the boards, and they were matchup dependent. They could always go small. You put Anthony Davis at the five, that's a wrap too. But for matchup teams and to save the banging on Anthony Davis's body, you kind of needed another big and just a five-star offseason for the Lakers, but they're in a different position. Their window is right now. Miami obviously made it to the NBA Finals. They're going to continue to build up, but they have the Giannis thing looming, and that's only gotten more and more realistic with what we've seen over the last few days in the Bogdanovich tire fire.
That Dwight Howard thing was funny. Did you guys see what happened with Dwight Howard?
No.
Where he announces on Twitter he's staying with the Lakers, and then he ends up signing with Philly. I don't know what actually happened, but that was just
It's my understanding that, as easy as it is to laugh at Dwight Howard, this one's actually on the Lakers, because the Montrezl Harrell thing was going out there.
They screwed him over.
Dwight kind of thought he had a deal in place. Then the Montrezl Harrell thing became more and more of a realistic thing. The Lakers did end up coming to Dwight with a deal, but it was less than he thought. And then Embiid and Morey were actively recruiting Dwight Howard. And then he made the best decision for him. I kind of feel for him because he wears... You traitor, the betrayal and obviously the embarrassing deleted tweet, because a guy can never get out of his own way in terms of public perception. But the Lakers were kind of playing games there a little bit with him.
What happened to the Lakers with Harrell?
Is this a Clutch Sports thing, Tony?
It's a Clutch Sports thing, Mike.
Yeah, that's a major coup for them to get Harrell, because it also weakens what is perceived to be, especially with the injury to Klay Thompson, their biggest rival in the Western Conference, although the Clippers were disastrous. I did like bringing in Ibaka. I guess it all sort of depends on what Serge Ibaka is going to be this season. Is he going to start that downward? He's already started the downward slope to end his career, but is there going to be a big fall off? Because honestly, you can make an argument that Ibaka for Harrell, that's actually a slight improvement if we're going off of what we saw from those two players most recently. So I kind of like what they've done, and I think the Clippers have another roster move to make to actually maybe shorten the gap a little bit.
Once you get Harrell and Marcus Gasol, though, there's no room for Dwight Howard, right?
Well, no. You kind of knew the Gasol thing was going to happen, and the second JaVale got traded to Cleveland, they might as well have just said Marcus Gasol has signed with the Lakers, and pretty shortly thereafter, after they moved that contract, it was done. So Marcus Gasol goes back to the team that actually originally held his draft rights. We come full circle with the Gasols. I love what the Lakers did in the offseason, and they're going to be favorites once again headed in the season. And the real mystery, and I don't know if Miami's going to play the Lakers Christmas Day. They announced that the NBA is going to be doing this schedule thing in phases. And what I assume is that you'll see what you saw in MLS, regional travel, try to limit travel, especially since there isn't a neutral bubble site. And I think you'll see in the first end of the NBA season, scheduling close to region, and then hopefully with the vaccine being rolled out and mitigating the virus, then you might see longer road trips. But it's a bit of a bummer. I think we're going to miss out on the traditional NBA Finals rematch Christmas Day.
Am I the only one that's going to miss Derrick Jones? Because I know Jay Crowder was really good in the playoffs for us, but man, I felt like he had a lot of upside defensively. Obviously, all the dunks and stuff. I'm going to miss him.
No, you won't.